Comedy on Radio Gorgeous.
Hello, this is Victoria Pearson and this is Radio Gorgeous. Today my guest is a stand-up, a broadcaster and an author. It's Rosie Wilby. Rosie, a warm welcome back to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you very much. Yes, I think it must have been about 4 years ago when I spoke about one of my old shows to you.
That's right, it's been far too long.
Yeah.
You have a new book out called Is Monogamy Dead? Is it dead? Really?
No, I don't think it is. The title of the book is a question, is monogamy dead, rather than making a statement. It was the title of my Edinburgh show a few years ago, but then I realised there was so much complexity to the subject. I started writing a lot of articles and doing a lot of podcasts and pieces for Radio 4 and thinking about this topic a whole lot more in the light of a survey that I had done asking what counts as cheating. So eventually I was lucky enough to get a place on a writer's retreat in Los Angeles in July 2016, started writing it. It was published last year and it's just been longlisted for a prize as well, which is very nice.
Fantastic. As flawed human beings, don't we all just want to be free from commitment and just have sex with whoever we like?
Well, I mean, if you take it down to pure animal terms and go back to cavemen and cavewomen times when we lived in communities, nobody necessarily knew who the father of a child was. So the whole community brought up the infants. And I hear that even, you know, things like breastfeeding were shared around the women. So it's a very different story to, you know, our nuclear family model that we see more in modern Western society. But yes, perhaps on a kind of biological level, we are programmed to perhaps have more than one sexual partner. And it is more of a cultural, societal construct, the idea of monogamy. That said, I think a lot of us crave it and we crave this kind of commitment and bond with somebody. And I totally understand that. And I actually am in a monogamous partnership myself, but I think I have a more sophisticated understanding of what that is now, because I've spoken to people who are in open relationships and who would describe themselves as polyamorous, and I think a lot of the values that they kind of hold dear are values that all of us should really be kind of placing a high priority on, things like communication, honesty, respect and trust, and discussing things like consent and desire. So, you know, I kind of think I've learned a lot more about how to have a successful monogamous partnership from interviewing lots of people who had open relationships.
And is there a price to be paid for that freedom? Because you just mentioned the open relationships.
Possibly. I mean, all relationships, however you do them, are some kind of compromise, and it's never completely plain sailing. It's never completely easy. Human beings are complex. So the more relationships you have, potentially the more complexity you open yourself up to. And, you know, people who have more than one relationship often have quite complex social diaries and lots of different commitments to juggle. And they need a lot of energy and time to do that. And they need to constantly be communicating where all their partners stand. So I think it's not for everybody. I mean, some people say that the price to pay, if you like, might be insecurity and jealousy, whereas actually I've found that that's less common than amongst my monogamous friends, where your partner sort of falling in love with someone else would really represent a huge threat, because in our sort of monogamous thinking, we would tend to think that automatically means you've got to break up and you've got to end a partnership, whereas of course in a more open partnership it wouldn't mean that at all. It would mean you might be bringing someone else into your relationship, or, you know, it depends. There are all kinds of different structures. People have triads where all three people are involved, or sometimes two people are involved with one of them and not with each other.
Wow.
And sometimes five people or more might be involved in some complex, interconnected way.
Wow. There's quite a lot of interesting things happening in this research that you were doing. I've never heard of that before. Triads?
Yeah, I mean, there's actually a glossary of new relationship terms in the back of my book, because I came across lots of fun language. I mean, one of my favourites is if you are polyamorous and you think you've reached your threshold of romantic partners, you can say that you're polysaturated.
Do you feel that the descriptions of relationships are evolving all the time? Because there seems to be a new label happening continuously.
Yeah, absolutely. There's new language, new buzzwords. Interestingly, I think a lot of buzzwords that catch on more widely often originate in the LGBTQ community,
yes,
which obviously I'm a part of.
Yes.
But there are concepts like living apart together, which originated in the lesbian community,
yeah,
and conscious uncoupling also originated in the lesbian community long before Gwyneth Paltrow. Oh, yes.
Do you know what? I thought Gwyneth Paltrow made that up.
No,
she didn't.
No. Actually, an author and family therapist in the US, I think, actually made the term up, but lesbians have sort of been doing a kind of ethical, friendly breakup where you kind of treat your ex like a family member for many, many years, which is the same practice. But also, one of the new buzzwords at the moment is micro-cheating. That's being used in the press and media a lot to sort of describe not exactly your partner having a full-blown affair, but say if they were texting or emailing somebody or looking at someone's Facebook page or spending a lot of time with a particular person that maybe they had an ambiguous connection with. So yeah, that's kind of been the latest one. I mean, I don't tend to use that term myself, but as I say, I did this survey asking what counts as cheating, and some of the behaviours like falling in love without necessarily having sex with someone or spending a lot of time staying up all night talking to someone, these kind of behaviours actually scored quite highly, as well as the obvious things like kissing or having sex, etc.
You've said that stand-up comedy is the extreme form of very public therapy. Would everyone benefit from doing stand-up rather than lying on a psychiatrist's couch?
Gosh. well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I don't want to necessarily encourage everyone into the stand-up scene because it's very saturated anyway.
Yeah.
And to be honest, whilst it can kind of help you process some things whilst you're writing about them, it can, of course, be very tough. You do have to be pretty resilient and develop quite a thick skin, because you might just have a nightmare gig and an awful audience that don't get you. So I probably wouldn't recommend it to someone who really is in need of therapy. But you know, once you've kind of got yourself relatively together, it can be quite a good way to look back and analyse, you know, previous relationships, perhaps once enough time has passed and you can see them in a slightly more objective way. I mean, I've written about old relationships in the book because you can have that more even-handed perspective a bit later.
I always think you have to have processed it totally in order for it to be funny. If you're still feeling those feelings, there's no way it's going to be funny, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think it's the old saying, isn't it? Tragedy plus timing plus comedy.
Absolutely. Rosie, you have to get on stage and be super confident, sharp, witty and sexy in front of 100 strangers. Is there anything you do to get yourself into the right mindset before you get on stage?
Yeah, that's something I say in the prologue of the book, isn't it? Well, I think it depends with what type of gig you're doing. If you're doing new material, they're often at very small, friendly nights, but new material can be particularly daunting because you've not said it before, you're not rehearsed, and you don't know how it's going to go down with an audience. Whereas when you're doing a show you've done many times, then you have a certain kind of amount of safety and certain amount of confidence in the material. So there's no kind of set routine for me particularly, but yeah. You know, just kind of getting myself in the zone. Maybe just, I don't like to kind of go through too much of my set in my head because that makes it a bit too scripty and not in the moment. But I might just go through my opening line, or I might have a look around the room and see if there's something funny to just ad lib about as an opener. If there's a funny, I once had a great time with a funny painting that was in the room that was just a very kind of very strange painting. It was just a nice thing that I'm sure other people who've done that room talk about, but no one else had talked about it yet that night, and it needed to be addressed.
Yeah. In your book, you say we all want to feel safe in a relationship, but is it possible to have both excitement and security?
That's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Those two things are slightly conflicting. There are a number of writers and speakers who talk about that conflict between our sort of individuality and sense of need for freedom, and also wanting to cozy down with somebody on the sofa and know that they're going to be there, and know that you have that commitment and that safety of kind of building a home or building some kind of security with somebody. I think it's a very, very tricky balance, but I think if you meet someone you have a good level of compatibility with and good communication with, which kind of gets easier as we get older to be a bit more direct about who we are and what we need and how we want to be in a relationship, particularly if we've had therapy, you know, I think it gets easier, but I think it's always a tricky thing to navigate.
Here's another quote from the book. To get sex with a man, you just need to smile at him. To get sex with a woman, you have to jump through a series of hoops. Are women more demanding than men in relationships?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm sort of making a bit of a little bit of a joke about it there. But yes, I think so. I mean, as a gay woman, I've often found women incredibly frustrating, and I thought, oh my god, when I used to date boys when I was a teenager and young men, you know, just before I kind of came out, and occasionally I would kind of dabble with men again after I had come out, you know, but when I did date men, I just thought men were kind of so easy, really. And not every man, I'm sure, but relatively straightforward, whereas women are so complicated. And two women together is so interesting in the dynamics that can play out and the sort of competition that can sometimes be there. You know, when you've got two women, you might be constantly comparing, is she more successful or is she more beautiful or is she thinner, you know, and all of these kind
really?
Of things, because women are made to feel in society insecure about these things. So I think there are very interesting dynamics that play out in a relationship between two women, and I sort of talk about lesbians being a kind of science control experiment where you've kind of removed the influence of men and you see kind of women's sexuality at its rawest, because it, you know, lesbian relationship is kind of women squared, if you like.
Yeah. I still don't understand men after all this time, so...
Of course, you know, it's all complicated, whoever we are, whoever we're having relationships with. I guess just, I found men could be a little bit more consistent, but that could have been just the men that I knew when I was dating men recently.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I was just very lucky and I went out with some really nice boys who were quite reliable and solid.
Yeah, there are some nice men. They do exist, I think. Are our relationship problems all of our own creation, no matter what our sexuality?
Not always, no. You know, sometimes you do meet someone who brings their problems to it, and often when you've got things you haven't resolved, that's when you might attract someone else who's got unresolved issues too. So, of course, then you can often bring out the worst in each other.
You are a presenter on Radio Diva. Do people phone in asking for advice on their love life?
Radio Diva is an LGBT magazine every Tuesday on Resonance FM, which is great fun to co-host alongside Heather Peace. And, we don't tend to have phone-ins, but we do like to engage with our audience on Twitter. So we do get some interesting tweets. But, yeah, we don't specifically focus on relationships. We're a magazine show. So I think one of our most popular features was when we had a sort of famous lesbian vet who's been on television, and people were tweeting in with their pet questions, so which is a hot topic.
Does just thinking about cheating on your partner count as cheating? If you've done it in your head, is it the same as doing it in real life?
Well, that was one of my questions on my survey, and some people thought it was, yes.
Right.
Which I kind of think that's a little bit, I feel that's kind of policing your partner too much if you're kind of trying to sort of censor their thoughts. I mean, surely everyone's entitled to a little fantasy, but, you know, this is why it's important to talk about these things, because maybe you are with someone who really has quite strict definitions of fidelity, and you probably want to know that up front. And if that's, you know, if you share those kind of boundaries, maybe you'll be fine. But I think it's very hard to control either someone else's thoughts or your own.
Yeah, so, true.
I think you're on dangerous territory if you regard that as cheating.
Is it better to be honest about infidelity rather than covering it up?
Oh, yes, I would say so. I think it's better to be honest perhaps before any infidelity occurs and be honest about your feelings, however painful that might be.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard stories of couples where an affair has happened, but they have recovered because there's been honesty and a discussion about maybe what was happening in the relationship to have led one party to go and seek, you know, something somewhere else. So I think honesty is always the best. I mean, how much honesty, I think you can perhaps be try to be sensitive around, because sometimes too much information could be proved too hurtful.
And finally, when can we see you doing some stand-up next, or any readings of your new book?
Well, I'm sort of touring a bit of a funny talk about the book at the moment, which has the same title, Is Monogamy Dead? And so it's a bit of a mix of like a TEDx talk, a comedy show, a bit of a discussion and book signing. And I read a funny chapter from the book about my adventures at the lesbian sauna. So I'm doing that talk at a load of festivals over the summer, festivals like Nosstock and Port Elliot and Lost Village. I'm also doing my Breakup Monologues podcast and live show at Wilderness Festival as well.
Excellent. Rosie, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been fantastic.
Okay, well, I hope people go and buy the book.
The book sounds completely fascinating. It sounds great. And for more amazing women, go to radiogorgeous.com.